Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Starts rattling your bones. It's time to get excited because it's time wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsor this week, Away. Away brings the show to you, DLC, of course, the show, all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy whose games always go to triple overtime, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian!
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everybody, and, no happy or sad crying from me in this episode, but I will say, holy moly, I am absolutely blown away by everybody who has contributed thus far to the St. Jude fundraiser. You guys knocked it out of the park, everybody.
Thank Knocking. You so. Continue to knock. It's not over, right?
It's not over. We are currently sitting just shy, as of we're recording this, just shy of $4,000.
Woo! Already beat your last year's total. That's amazing.
It is amazing, and because I want to, now I'm getting like, we can do it. If we hit 5K this week, because I'm playing a bunch of retro games on my streams, I'll give away a Sega Genesis Mini. So it doesn't matter nice. What dollar amount you enter, US only, blah, blah, blah. But enter, I'll get it set up, address, stuff like that. I'll be doing that right after this show. So
yeah, you can win stuff, but even better than that, you can help.
Yes.
Fight cancer in children, which is, you know, wonderful and a worthwhile cause if there ever was one. And I'm so proud of you for doing this, for spearheading this. And, it's great that we can publicize it here on this show. But tell people how they can find it if they didn't hear last week's episode.
Yeah, I have an easy link on my website, christianspicer.com. It's right there on the top. All of your donations go to St. Jude and tax deductible, all that good stuff. And you and I have a friendly wager going with between our basketball teams. So
got real interesting this weekend. Got real interesting. Turned into a series.
It became a series. So either way, it's win-win. Hopefully the Warriors still lose, right?
I mean, that's not my position, but it is win-win. It is win-win. I also have my own little quick thing at the top here. It's not nearly as important as raising money to fight cancer in kids. But I'm so pleased that everybody that has taken the time to check out my new show, Dungeon Run, which is my Dungeons & Dragons live play show that I talked about a few times on this show. Our second episode is out. It runs every Wednesday night on caffeine.tv/TheDungeonRun. It's 6 p.m. Pacific time that we stream for about three and a half hours. And it's been a blast. The response has been overwhelmingly positive. And now it's on YouTube and available as an audio podcast. So anywhere you get this show, you can get The Dungeon Run. If you search for my name or you search for The Dungeon Run, you can find that as an audio podcast if you don't want to sit in front of YouTube for 3.5 hours. Or you can watch it. There's some really cool visual stuff. There's an animatronic Mind Flayer puppet. There's some really awesome models and just an awesome set and stuff. The production is really high quality. So thank you to everybody that's watched. I've gotten just the best feedback of really any project I've ever launched. People are just flipping out over it, which is pretty amazing. But I really want more people to see it. I'm very proud of it. And I think we're going to go to some really cool places. Episode 3 this week is going to be awesome. So thank you, everybody that's watched it. And I hope if you haven't watched it yet, you'll check it out.
It's real good. And I will second the comment that the miniatures and the builds, there's like a sideways tower, no spoilers, It all looks absolutely incredible. And, you know, I guess the Dungeon Master's like pretty hot also, you know.
Thanks. All right. Enough preamble. Let's get into the show. And we have an awesome guest who's been sitting patiently listening to us ramble on. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, man, I'm excited because DLC stands for Director Who Loved Cats, because we have freelance art director, video games writer, and self-confessed cat lover, our friend Mr. Aaron Morales is back with us. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, guys. I'm so happy to be back. And I'm not going to say that I left PR just so I could do this podcast, but I'm also not going to say that.
You're not going to not say that.
Not going to not say that, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm so glad. Yeah, the last time we spoke, you said it might be the last time because you were crossing the aisle and you were going into PR. But now, thankfully, yeah, we have you back on our side.
I crossed back.
Well, awesome. We have tons to talk about. It's been some interesting news this week and some really cool games to get to. So let's start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. It's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or by sending us an email at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Aaron, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, this is kind of the one that just tickled me the most, was the Sonic the Hedgehog movie trailer and the very strong internet reactions to it. I would love to hear what you guys think of it, and then also about the kind of news that they're actually going to respond to all of this criticism that it got.
Yeah, it's weird. So Sonic the Hedgehog is coming out. It's a big star-studded movie. Jim Carrey is going to be Dr. Robotnik, I guess, in it.
James Marsden.
Yeah, James Marsden, yeah.
Cyclops is the police officer, the human sidekick. Sonic is voiced by Ben Schwartz of, I guess, John Raffio fame, perhaps, but also helped design the sound and voice for BB-8. The guy is a comedic, dare I say, genius.
He's brilliant.
Is hysterical. The talent is all there, right?
Yeah, it seems like they got a bunch of A-list people to do this, and they were at, I guess, CinemaCon or one of them. They had the entire cast, and they were all talking about how excited they were to be a part of it. And we see the first trailer, and it went over like a lead balloon on the internet. You know the internet. You know how the internet is.
Fast to
overreact. You might say, but there was most of the criticism was reserved for the look of Sonic the Hedgehog himself, which is, let's say, quite a departure from the video game, just sort of in size and shape, and also in its anthropomorphized face, which I think rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Aaron, what did you think about that? Did you cringe when you saw the trailer, or are you giving this the benefit of the doubt?
I think the trailer's fine. I mean, it looks like a movie that is for kids, or maybe, you know, people our age who grew up playing Sonic and then want to take their kids to see it. And, you know, it's fine in that regard. But I kind of can't believe that they whiffed on Sonic's character design so much. I mean, he just didn't look right. You know?
Like, he looks like a guy in a suit that you would like go to a theme park and see, or like a bad Halloween costume that they sell in a bag, you know, a bit.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, if you're a longtime Sonic fan, as I am, it's a borderline abusive relationship. Like, we've been through so many ups and downs. It's two steps forward, two steps back. You know, it's such a great return to form with Sonic Mania like 2 years ago. But then that same year, they released Sonic Forces, which was just another terrible 3D Sonic game. And I don't know if you guys saw, Sega posted some pretty bad financials this year. Mm-hmm. And they are talking about refocusing on their core IP. So I feel like they really need this Sonic movie to kind of, you know, remind people why they like Sonic, and having him look like a Halloween costume is probably not the way to go. So I think it's really interesting that they're actually responding to this criticism.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest news point, that Jeff Fowler, the director, actually came out on Twitter and said, quote, "The message is loud and clear. You aren't happy with the design and you want changes. It's going to happen. Everyone at Paramount and Sega are fully committed to making this character the best he can be. So this movie has a hard release date of November. One would assume that a lot of the CG work, you know, Sonic, despite looking a bit like somebody in a costume, it is a fully CG character. You would assume that that's a lot of work and time consuming, and that most of that has been either completed at this point, or at least, you know, in the pipeline with a certain look and feel that they've shown in the trailers. Going back to the drawing board and reimagining the character throughout its entire film, you figure Sonic is going to be in a lot of shots in this movie. This seems like a really crazy thing. And my question to you, Aaron, is it good? You know, we had this whole dust up about Sekiro just recently about, oh, artistic vision. And Brian Altano had a great tweet where he said, you know, I guess honoring the artist's vision only matters when it's, you know, a From Software game, not when it's a movie. And I kind of feel like, is this the internet drunk with power? Is this a good thing that we can sort of, as a mob, say we hate and you'll change? How do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't want to take it too seriously because at the end of the day, it's a, you know, movie based on a video game. But right. Like, I think as long as they give the artists enough time and pay them enough, then I think I'm all for it. Did you see the one of the artists at Sucker Punch did like a quick
Photoshop
and I was
the
like,
poster.
Oh, look, that looks like Sonic.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
How does. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. If you haven't seen it, it's basically it's this poster with a bunch of missiles kind of being shot at Sonic. And he took the one that they put out, which is the kind of ridiculous looking, you know, guy in a costume looking one, and made it into what we all would recognize as Sonic from the video game. And it doesn't seem like it was that difficult. So I don't know.
I mean, granted, it's a still, but yeah, yes.
Right.
But it definitely seems more in keeping with the character that we know and, you know, love or hate.
Yeah.
His legacy and his look. You know, it's more modern Sonic. It's not like the pudgy 2D Sonic of Genesis days, but it's at least recognizably the Sonic.
Yeah.
You know?
Christian, what do you think, man? For a movie to be successful, every single person that's ever played a Sonic the Hedgehog game would probably need to bring a friend. You know what I mean? Like, or five. The audience that gets upset about how Sonic doesn't look like the Sonic we all know is a drop in the bucket for what a big budget Hollywood film wants to reach. Is it good that vocal audience has this kind of pull on the look and feel of a beloved character, or is it disturbing to you?
It's both. And I think it's we are a victim of our own successes or of social media and everybody having a thought that can be sent to the most important person, you know, like there's a chance now they will see it. And marketing plays up that as well. You know, they really use that stuff. They lean into that stuff. They use social media to get audiences hyped and excited about things. And so the flip side of that is this, right? I mean, if you can send in, like, what are some of the famous campaigns to save TV shows, like sending paper clips to whatever, you know, or like these big tweet campaigns or change.org campaigns and things like that, where you see things get changed because of fan passion, and it's like bringing back a show or something that I think people would say universally is good. You see it for things like this also. And so I think it's hard to live in a culture where we listen sometimes and not others when we position ourselves as you know, leaning into that. And I think even studios, you know, we've all seen the movie. Well, you haven't, Jeff, but the rest of us have seen the movie trailer where it's like, incredible. And then it's like some random person on Twitter, you know, the PR leans into that and finds the things to source the things and whatever. So I understand it. I think to echo what Aaron said, I hope people have enough time to do this, to make these changes. And I think also they've opened a can of worms in that I don't think just connecting Sonic's eyes will be enough, you know, like a subtle change where it's like, we added the white space. Now his eyes are one big eye. Like, you expect we did it. I think people are expecting something closer to that Sucker Punch edit. And the detective Pikachu had some comments. I think it was on Vox where I read it. And he's like, we couldn't redo the look of our characters because our actors' performances would be way off. Like, eyeline, everything changes. He's like, I don't envy what they're doing with Sonic. It sounds very hard. And I can't imagine, you know, redoing all this. Like, it's one thing and to Photoshop a picture or to edit a still picture, but to do that for a movie, you're doing that in every single frame and animating it. It's a tall task and one I hope they pull off, but I wouldn't hold your breath if you're counting on a classic, you know, Sonic portrayal coming to this movie suddenly.
I guess my feeling is that if you, as the creative team behind this endeavor, felt passionate about the thing you made, you wouldn't listen. You know, if you really believed in your changes to how Sonic looked, you wouldn't be fazed by, because people had the same backlash for a lot of things over time. You know, Michael Keaton as Batman, just recently Will Smith as the genie. People went, what? That looks so dumb. Disney went, I don't care. We're Disney. You're going to like it. You're going to go see it.
But that's a bigger change though, too. They can't, I mean, he's been paid millions of dollars. He's been cast as this. They're not saying they're changing the actor playing Sonic, right?
No, I don't think it was don't make Will Smith the genie. It was he looks goofy and blue. Ah. But you notice all the posters now, he doesn't look blue anymore. Yeah. I don't know. It feels to me like it's more indicative of lack of confidence in the thing they've made than anything else to say, yeah, you guys are right. We didn't even notice how weird his teeth look. Nobody mentioned it in the meetings. You know, like we needed you, the internet, to point it out. We couldn't tell on our own. Or maybe they were fighting for that and somebody was like, no. And then, you know, they got the backing of the internet and they're like, look, now we can make the case. Thank goodness. Who knows what the backstory is, but it doesn't bode well for the quality of this movie to just be like, yeah, no, we'll change it because you guys don't like it. I don't know. It doesn't make me feel good. I'm rooting for it. I want the movie to be good.
I just love that a week after you had Blake Harris on the show that we have Nintendo and Sega facing off again in another console war. Movie wars.
It's true. It's true. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
I mean, I think that is the biggest story of this week. If I were to be able to have my pick, I know what yours is going to be, Jeff, so I will. I will leave that to you. The other big story, interesting story. I mean, that Sonic thing is the thing I'm most fascinated about. I talked about it on my St. Jude stream last night as well. It blows me away. Everything about it blows me away. But I guess maybe I can't transition. I was going to say, speaking of things that have changed their looks, Borderlands. that game saw a massive overhaul way back when, 20 years ago, when the first one came out. But Borderlands 3 had its official gameplay stream reveal thing. And it looked a lot like Borderlands, and everybody that played it said it was Borderlands and it was good Borderlands. So it's Borderlands and there aren't microtransactions, but you can spend money on cosmetics, but only cosmetics. And it looks like it's Borderlands. I'm trying to think, what else could I say that other than just saying Borderlands a whole bunch? It looks good, and it looks like Borderlands. That's it. I summed it up, right? Like that's
it's interesting for a sequel to come this late, right? To be we as Borderlands fans have waited this long for a big numbered sequel. It really isn't changing up anything, you know. It's interesting that the big news coming out of their reveal stream, where they showed tons of the game, like an hour of gameplay, people got hands on with it. I mean, it really was a coming out party for the details of the game. All this stuff is really granular. It's really the devil's in the details type stuff. Where, how is it different than Borderlands 2? Well, specifically, how skills work is different, and you can augment your skills in different ways. Their skill trees are slightly different, and so you'll have much more variety in builds of characters, and there's augments that you can actually loot. That sounds cool. That sounds really cool. They didn't show those augments, by the way. There's new ways to maneuver. You can mantle up things. So you can leap and grab onto the edge of a mantle. You can slide. So, you know, minor things, but stuff that has been added in first-person shooters nowadays. The Apex Legends of the world have that kind of fluid movement. So it's cool that Borderlands is catching up with the modern times in how you move. But again, granular stuff, you know, this is not big sweeping changes. Yes, they showed new environments. You're getting off of the, what's the name of the world where Borderlands takes place?
Pandora.
Pandora, yes. Right. So, you know, you're getting off that. You're seeing more interesting places. There's loot instancing, where you'll actually get specific loot for you when you're playing with other people, so you don't have to fight over it. That's pretty cool. But yeah, there's not a lot of marquee big things. It looks pretty. It's more Borderlands. You play it with your friends. You're going to love it. But I don't know. Aaron, are you excited for Borderlands 3, or do you think it is a little underwhelming in its, you know, minor changes?
I jumped in there with Pandora as if I know anything about Borderlands. I've literally never played. I've never played a single one, but mostly because I had friends who were really into it. And the way they described the kind of like loot grind just did not appeal to me at all. So the fact that it looks like more of the same, did not really appeal to me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's dig into the thing that Christian kind of referred to, which is, Randy Pitchford, did this sort of rallying cry during the stream where he said, we won't have Borderlands 3 won't have microtransactions or any of that nonsense. And the funny line in this article is a statement that, according to other members of the Borderlands team, is false.
Yeah.
It's like, who's with me? No microtransactions. None of us are with you.
Narrator.
None of the team. None of the team. So evidently they had to come out and quickly clarify that. Chris Brock, who is a producer on the game, talked to GameIndustry.biz and was like, so when we say no microtransactions, what we're really trying to say is that we're not trying to nickel and dime people. We'll probably make content after launch that we will sell, but we also don't intend to take what Borderlands was and then chop it up into chunks and sell it.
Yeah, I I feel bad. I empathize with Randy, who has had...
I thought you were going to empathize with Chris Brock, not with Randy. I empathize with Chris Brock, who's like, I got to go and put lipstick on this.
Yes.
Oh, man.
That is tough. But I will say, 2K, publisher, right, of yep. Gearbox and Borderlands, the big, they have a lot of microtransactions in a lot of their games and for a lot of things, right? All sorts of things, make a lot of money off of stuff. NBA, 2K, Rockstar Games, a lot of stuff. And so what I think, and I don't know because I don't know, but I think the intent was like, hey, this is Borderlands. Like when people talk about loot boxes, because that's what's weird about Borderlands, right? Like you're literally getting loot boxes, but not like that, yeah. You know? So it's like, our game is full of loot boxes. Randy, shut the hell up. I mean, no loot boxes. Like,
it's also not true. Oh, right, Randy.
Exactly, yeah. It's called Borderlands 3. Here's the trailer. The trailer's not playing. Son of a... because Borderlands and its loot and all that stuff and loot boxes and grinding for treasure and all these things, it's a game that existed before the proliferation of Star Wars Battlefront 2s and kind of that appetite, publisher appetite for these microtransactions. So I feel as if it's like, it's not, don't worry, we're not paywalling Borderlands, but you can
Until
buy some cosmetics. But it won't won't affect your game, except you can see. It's how do you message that? I empathize. I really do.
Yeah, I mean it's virtually impossible to release a game nowadays without having some kind of microtransaction. That's just part of the economy now. And like, right. You know, it's just what it is. And the hope is that it's as unobtrusive as possible.
Right. Yeah, the idea is that it has to have some ancillary in, you know, the game, the size and scale and budget of a Borderlands 3. Yes, it's going to include some post-release content that they will charge people for. So I think that's to be expected. I don't think anybody is quibbling over that. I think he was trying to say, we're not going to charge you for a better gun. Ah, I'm not even sure that's the case. We'll see. I hope that's the case. But I kind of feel like they're going to be like, yeah, you want a better gun because it's prettier? It's cosmetic because there's a bazillion D guns in this game, you know? So we'll see. We'll see. But I appreciate the intention.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's why I empathize. And I think the game looks great. I know I was kind of being a little dismissive, where like it is more Borderlands, but there are those granular changes. I do think they make it interesting. I think they make the game, it appears, a little more solo friendly, which is how I played Borderlands 2. And, you know, some of those traits or skills, they seem like they're designed to pair with something, you know? And while you can certainly build out a skill tree and have fun with a lot of characters, this seems to give me as a solo player more customization, which I think is exciting. I think leaving Pandora is going to be fun. And to its detriment, I think to some extent Borderlands suffers from incredible art design early on, where this game does look better, but it looks like how I remember Borderlands 1 looking.
Right.
And there's been so many iterations and re-releases and 4K textures that it doesn't have that wow factor for me. But I'm sure when I see it running at home on my TV, I'll be like, oh yeah, this is very smooth. This is Borderlands. So I'm excited, but it didn't blow me the way with, like, you know, the way God of War did, where it's like they took this beloved franchise and flipped it on its head.
It also doesn't feel like they needed to wait this long to make Borderlands 3. You know, like if this is what you were making.
Well, I think they were making, I think they were making Battleborn.
Well, I guess you're right.
You know, I think they were making other things, and then they were like, hey, we have a year, we should make Borderlands.
I don't know if that's true. I think they've been working on this for a long, long time, and then they just sort of came back around, you know? Who knows?
Maybe.
But all right, surprising nobody, my story of the week is the final unveiling and pre-sales for Valve's VR headset called the Index. Valve, after they teased their headset, they finally came out with the full specs. You can pre-order it. It sounds like the Ferrari of VR headsets, and it's gotten me very excited. There's a lot of technical details. Basically, they got real pretty screens in there and a real high refresh rate, 120 hertz refresh rate that evidently has an experimental overclocked mode of 144 hertz, which is pretty great. Dual 1440 by 1600 LCDs, which equates to 50% more subpixels than OLED, which means basically what they're trying to do is eliminate that screen door effect that is so prominent in first gen VR headsets. And I say bravo. They have
all these bugs are going to get in now, though.
Yeah, well, no, there's no screen door. It's just a sliding glass door now. So
oh,
it's better.
Okay. I thought you had the window open and there's no screen. You have the front
no,
door.
No, no, no. Sliding glass door. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Denser pixels is what it is. Denser. they have 20% more field of view than the Vive, which is awesome. Field of view is a big, you know, a big generational talking point for VR, where you want to get more of your peripheral vision in the headset so it's even more encompassing of your view. Low persistence. All kinds of stuff. And I'm excited. This seems like a really great headset. It's still tethered. It still uses the external tracking boxes that the HTC Vive did. In fact, it's compatible with the exact same ones. So you don't have to rebuy the boxes if you want to upgrade your Vive to this headset. Although they do have the 2.0 version of the tracking. They call them lighthouses, I think. Mm-hmm. And those are supposedly, those have a wider field of view and are supposed to be an improvement. New controllers, which have been teased for a long, long time by Valve. These are the Knuckles controllers, I believe.
Like Sonic so 3?
Yeah. They look strangely like a guy in a suit. it is three SKUs they're offering, just the headset by itself, the headset with the controllers, or the headset with the controllers with the lighthouses. It's not cheap, up to a grand for the full big package. I think it's 700 something for the one step down, and then 500 for just the headset by itself, because it is compatible with the original Vive controllers and original Vive lighthouses. So
right up your alley. You circled the release date on your calendar. You were first in line. Like, this is
man. So I launched this new Dungeons & Dragons show, and it's been a ton of work. It's been really fun, but it's been a ton of work, all-encompassing. And our first episode, I believe, was the day that the pre-orders went on sale. And I just lost track of, like an idiot, like a real dummy. I lost track of time. I lost track of that. And then I didn't pre-order until the next day. Sold out. All the SKUs sold out. So it releases July 1st like an idiot. I'm in the August 31st estimated arrival.
What did you do? What SKU?
I did the headset with controllers because I'm just going to keep my Vive boxes because they're mounted. They're mounted in my room. Mm-hmm. I have them drilled into the wall. I'm like, well, it's great. I don't have to undrill them. So basically the reason it's my story of the week is I'm hoping someone knows someone listening knows someone or is someone that can help a brother out, move me higher up in the queue. Come on. I'm not going
to. You're not asking for a free one, even a review.
Set. No, I'll you're pay for it.
Yeah.
I will pay for it. I just want it earlier. I don't ask for a lot on the show. I don't come begging very often. This is me, a simple guy standing in the rain, asking you to help me. Need it.
Please, he only has three VR headsets. Like, please.
That's right. How's a guy supposed to get by with only three? Also, I have a slightly used Vive if anybody wants to buy it.
So here's my question to you for this. Now that, you know, specs are out, pre-orders are out, all this stuff. The thing that concerns me is I feel like Valve has released a peripheral for a peripheral, and that they've said that their game, which they haven't announced yet, but will be anyone with any
three games, three games.
We'll be able to play. It'll be available on Steam, which is awesome. But
yeah, any Steam VR compatible headset, which is basically all of them,
so
will work.
What do the Knuckles controllers do? It's just like allows you to flick people off in game because like it can't rely on.
No, they're
them.
Backwards compatible. Everything's backwards compatible. It's all
right.
The Knuckles controllers still have buttons, and so they're still able to work exactly like
but
any that's other
not my
controller.
Question. My question is, how will the games use them in any way that makes them right. worth having if I can still use my Vive wands?
It's a good question. I imagine it'll be like, you know, check the checkbox if you can articulate your fingers.
But what,
then it's exactly. like, oh, my fingers are articulated.
But I'm saying, is that worth, I mean, to you it is, but it seems like a hard sell of $300 to me personally.
Well, yes. I mean, clearly Valve is not interested. Oculus this week also put pre-orders up for Quest and the Rift S. Oculus is in the business of trying to make VR mainstream, right? The Quest is squarely aimed at people's first headset that you don't need a computer for. You get cool games. It's all walled garden. It's all curated experiences that they know work great on Quest. It's going to be this thing that is going to sell VR to the masses, hopefully. Valve doesn't care about that. Valve is like, no, we want to make the coolest thing. We want to make stuff for people like Jeff Cannata, who are stupid and will just want the very best experience. And so they have my money and evidently a lot of other people's because it's sold out. And I'm not happy about that. The other thing I'm not happy about is nobody evidently has talked to NVIDIA in many years about the fact that NVIDIA was like, hey, we put an entire port on the back of our new cards for VR and literally none of the new headsets support it. Zero. Zero new headsets. There's been like four or five announced new headsets since the VR port was put on NVIDIA cards, and zero of them support it. So I don't understand that, and it kind of ticks me off. Aaron, what is your feelings about Valve Index?
I definitely feel for your pain. I'm sorry that you're going through this really hard time right now. I think that of all those numbers that you rattled off, the price is the most insane one. And I'm yes. very happy with my PlayStation VR. I'm not a PC gamer. Like, I'm a plug and play console guy. So glad that you will eventually get to experience the high-end VR glory, but
is it even worth it in August?
But I'm just like give me Tetris Effect and I'm very happy.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I recognize how obnoxious I am about this, and I apologize to no one. No, I like that there's somebody who's making this. It is an absurd price point for sure. They don't seem to care that it's, you know, a super high end thing for a very niche market, a niche of a niche, as Christian said. It is the tiniest fraction of a tiny fraction audience already. But I kind of dig that they're like, yeah, let's just make the best headset. Let's just make the best one. And I like that. And we all have agreed. We all, if by listening to the show, you've made a pact not to tell my wife about this.
There's no way she can find this episode either. So it's, she
doesn't. It's like 35 minutes into the show. She's not going to last this long. We both know it.
Also, Aaron, you're wonderful.
No, she's... Yes, she's wonderful. The version of the show that she listens to, I edit in a, baby, you're wonderful at the beginning. So I already beat you to it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited to see how much better it is with these sort of, these are sort of minor tweaks, but it really feels like they focused their attention on eliminating screen door, making a very smooth, crisp experience in the headset. And I think it's going to be noticeable. I'm very, very, very excited for it. Oh, also the audio is doesn't need earphones. Like kind of like the Quest and the, I think the S is like that too, where it just, it nothing goes over your ear, but the audio still sounds really good. So it's cool. I'm into it.
Did they say, and this is just because I saw the price and I was like, I can't. But the one question I do have that I haven't looked into myself, what kind of card do you need to pump out the higher, what is it, 144 is what it can support? Do they yeah. say? Because the Rift S is still, you know, they didn't change the graphic card requirements for those from the traditional Rift. What does this thing need to work?
Well, evidently they only released minimum requirements. Huh. So the minimum requirements are GTX 970 or RX 480 with a DisplayPort. They don't even support HDMI anymore, which is pretty crazy. And then a CPU with dual core hyper-threading or better, and then USB 3.0 and 8 gigs of RAM. Okay. So that's the minimum requirement. I have no idea. They haven't really talked about it. They're calling it an experimental mode, the 144. So who knows what that means as far as actual support. But I think even if with its base mode, it still beats all the other headsets, even the new ones that have been announced. So I'm super excited, and it's really kind of pretty looking. It's got this reflective front. It's a pretty sexy thing. I don't know how it'll feel compared to the others. I don't know if it's heavier or lighter. I haven't heard anybody talk about
it. Wallet is just, you don't even feel it. It's
well, that's how I counterbalance myself with my wallet. Now that's not gonna work, so who knows. All right, I'm getting another headset. But that means, do I get the Quest too? Christian and I have been talking at length all week about, like, what happens now?
Well, because the Quest
is cool too.
I know Facebook is listening. If the internet's taught me anything, it's that Facebook is listening. I'll take a Quest.
Yeah, if you're handing out Quests, what do we got to do? What information of mine do I need to give you that you don't already have to get me a Quest?
But also, I'm not, please know that I am, don't get me wrong, like, also for real, if there's a review event, I am interested, but I'm also, don't take this as me begging for a Quest. It's fine. I'm very fortunate.
You're going to do the whole, you're doing the beg, not beg?
You can't. No, I'm just trying to neg them. Don't even give it to me. I don't even want it. Yeah. But it's not that good.
Yeah. Somebody on Twitter was like, when I complained about me not getting into my pre-order in time, somebody was like, I bought two headsets because of you. If anybody deserves to get a review unit, it's you. I'm like, send that to, don't send that to me. Send that to Gabe Newell at steam.com. Anyway, all right. I'm sure everybody thinks I'm thoroughly obnoxious at this point. So that's the perfect time to segue into our sponsor. Do you travel? I travel. I travel quite frequently, actually, and oftentimes I'm traveling with, you know, just for short periods, and I'm just using a carry-on. The carry-on that I use now is called Away. And really, this is because Away has made a carry-on for people like me, and I suspect people like you, people who are connected all the time, who have digital items that you want to bring on the plane with you that you don't want to have lose a charge, because the carry-ons that Away makes have a charger built into the luggage. How cool is that? They're made for people who travel. They have two sizes for carry-ons, a smaller one and a larger one. And one has an optional ejectable battery. It's pretty cool. You charge your luggage before you go, and it's like having a backup battery that you can charge all your devices on. It's awesome. Plus, the suitcases are cool looking. They come in a variety of colors. One of the things I hate with luggage is like everybody has a black bag with a zipper, and so everybody's suitcase looks like each other. My Away, I have two of them. I have one that's cool in a blue color, and I have one that's like it's called sand, the color. It's like a light beige. It looks so good. And all of their colors are really, really cool. They have four 360-degree spinner wheels going around. You can have it stand on its end and move it around. Really, really cool. There's a Instagram video somewhere of my son standing on it and me riding him around and him giggling. So that's my Away. They have a TSA-approved combination lock. So you can lock it, a removable, washable laundry bag. They've thought of everything, really. And we've thought of the best part. We'll give you $20 off your suitcase. So if you want to get an Away, which you should, these are great. I use mine all the time. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/DLC and use promo code DLC during checkout. Because this season, everyone wants to get Away. That's awaytravel.com/DLC and promo code DLC. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right, it's time to talk about the games that we have been playing. Aaron, I know you have been playing a couple of the big ones. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with Mortal Kombat 11, because I know Christian's been playing it too. And that was actually my first return to game reviewing. I reviewed Mortal Kombat 11 for EW, nice. Which was really fun. I think it's a really good game, and I like it a lot, but it is so similar to MK10 and Injustice 2 that I kind of was feeling a really strong, like, diminishing returns. I think it's super solid, and it's like a great, you know, it's a great fighting game. But while I was playing it, I was like, this is good and I like it, but like, I feel like I've played this before. So I literally loaded up Mortal Kombat 10, and I was like, if you had shown me these, I would have been like, could not tell you the difference. I'm curious if what Christian thinks about that.
Well, Christian's, you can tell the difference because he's playing on Switch. but no, so you're saying that NetherRealm basically perfected it.
Yes.
And now they're just making more of it.
It's like, they've totally nailed it. It's great. But also, they had already nailed it with Mortal Kombat 10 and Injustice 2. So it almost feels, like a super Mortal Kombat X, like more right, of a half step, but yeah, Turbo EX plus Alpha. it just didn't feel like a significant enough jump for me. And, you know, like, kind of the big draw is the story mode, which, like, for me is not a big enough draw because it's so goofy. And, you know, like, the lore I've played every Mortal Kombat, since the arcade original, and it was never like the story of ninjas in Halloween costumes fighting soldiers in Halloween costumes was never that exciting to me, and definitely not as much as Injustice, you know, which has DC's like total, like, entire pantheon of superheroes and supervillains to pull from.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, it does seem like they've gotten into this cadence of, you know, an Injustice game and then a Mortal Kombat game, then an Injustice game, then a Mortal Kombat game. Don't know if that will continue. I kind of assume it will. And if so, it does feel a bit like more like a Madden, you know, like the improvements year over year maybe aren't as dramatic as a full numbered sequel would be to a normal fighting game franchise, where it's more like, hey, the roster's new, the move sets are tweaked, the story is going to be different, but it's not as big of a leap as a, you know, Street Fighter V from a Street Fighter IV or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that the jump from Mortal Kombat 9 to Mortal Kombat 10 was so, it felt more significant. As much as I enjoyed playing it, there was just like a huge sense of deja vu the entire time.
Interesting. So Christian, did you have that experience too? Or I know you were really positive about the game, even on Switch.
Yeah, I understand Aaron's thoughts or reservations toward the game. I did not feel the same way. I thought the story was great. It's been so silly since 9, and I think 9 maybe had the best story because it was really cool and inventive to see how NetherRealm retconned stuff and like, oh, it's the first game in the game. Like it really felt nice. But it's been a really cool arc, this trilogy of 9, 10, and 11, and seeing it come to what I consider a satisfactory conclusion. I'm sure there's still, you know, more story to tell, but it was really neat. It's kind of Raiden's journey, and it's these characters you've been with since, if you're old like I am, you know, the original Mortal Kombat and Liu Kang, and kind of, I'm not spoiling anything here and saying that Raiden and Liu Kang back in those days were intertwined, right? Like those two characters were the forefront of the movie and those old arcade games, and to see them kind of, even with Mortal Kombat 9, continue to pay respects to that. And I thought 11 story was really, really cool. I really enjoyed it. I thought the cutscenes were really well done. I talked about it, I think, on last week's show, how it's like, I'm just fighting, and sometimes fighting as a character I don't really want to play as, but because of the story and the narrative, it has me, you know, playing as all these characters, like, 'cause I want to see it unfold. And I think the way that they've kind of evolved the fighting mechanic, I think, has been smart. I mean, Street Fighter V, I didn't play much of back when it first launched, but my impression of it then, and as a fully featured game, it launched lacking a bunch of features, in my opinion, and it didn't set the fighting world on fire with what it was doing, or Marvel versus Capcom Infinite, I think, had a whole host of problems. So I think if a fighting game comes out, and again, I'm not an Evo Mortal Kombat player by any stretch of the imagination, but for NetherRealm to make another one of these games and add... what are they called? Brutal Hits, like the mid-match fatality. Gosh, why can I not think of what these are called?
Brutality.
Not a brutality. It's...
Fatal Blow.
Fatal Blow, yeah. Adding Fatal Blows, I think, is a really interesting dynamic. The defensive...
But, like, the Fatal Blow is basically the X-ray move. Like, it's almost identical. And the problem is that they only have one per character. So if you play for a weekend, you've seen every single Fatal Blow like 600 times.
Sure. And if you've played Street Fighter 2, you've seen a Shuriken. I don't know. Like, I mean, I know they're more cinematic, but Mortal Kombat 1 had one fatality. Like, yes, you've seen them all, but that's, I think, from a strategic standpoint, I think they're interesting in the match and how they play out. And I think the aggressive and the defensive, I'm bad with the names of fighting game things, but the bars they've added are an interesting subtle tweak to when you can, you know, add extra power to a special move and kind of how that plays out in a fight. I think the tweaks are subtle, kind of like as we discussed for Borderlands 3, but I think they change the game in a meaningful way. I'm still really high on the game. I think even after the patches, at least if I've played it, the unlockables still feel very grindy to me, and I probably won't get through them. I think if I was a completionist, I'd be frustrated by some of the towers and by some of how the crypt plays out. But I understand Aaron's points. I think they're totally valid. They just, none of that struck me that way personally. To me, and I don't, this isn't like story of the week, don't need to spend time on it, but to me, the thing that makes me sad about Mortal Kombat 11 is just the stories that have come out, kind of about working conditions at NetherRealm.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't want to say every big studio.
Yeah.
It's, that makes me sad. So that's the thing that's the only thing that soured me is reading some of these accounts of sexist, toxic, and crunchy behavior at NetherRealms. And I don't want to brush that off as like, oh, they don't talk about, I read it, I'm talking about it. It does impact how I feel about the game. I don't have any personal, knowledge of this case, only what everybody's kind of read online. But that's what's kept me from the game this week more than anything else. Not that it feels samey.
Interesting.
That's a bummer. Yeah.
Well, I haven't played it at all either, and I was super excited about it on its road to release, and it just kind of hit at a tough time for me. I'm so busy with other things that I have limited bandwidth, and it hasn't I haven't played it. But you know, I think that NetherRealm has done such a great job with these games. I totally get what you're saying, Aaron, that it's like, do they reinvent the wheel? They've kind of perfected it. It works great. They're doing their thing, but I totally understand that it might feel like, well, yeah, every year they do that thing. So I don't know.
Especially because Mortal Kombat X or 10 or whatever is on Xbox Game Pass. So
right.
You can essentially play that for, you know, $10 for a month. And right. I feel like you wouldn't be missing out on that much versus the new one.
Yeah. Interesting. You've also been playing Days Gone, which is another big release that I think underwhelmed some people. But my feeling is that you are really digging it, right?
Well, I wish I did. I really do.
I thought I saw a tweet of yours saying that you were digging this.
I really liked the beginning. I think the motorcycle is great. I love just kind of like riding around like this beautiful world. It's such a big, beautiful world that Ben Studio has created. And I really, like, in the opening, got a lot of enjoyment out of just kind of like, you know, like, all right, I'm going to hop on my bike and ride around.
Until you run out of gas.
Yeah.
Or your bike breaks down and then your bike is an albatross around your neck.
I just
will throw this bike in the garbage and move on.
I mean, I think I've put about 40 hours into it now and I'm bored. Like, it's boring. It's basically like a third person Far Cry without any personality. And it's kind of a rare miss for a Sony first party. Like, it feels really surprising coming off of such a strong last year with God of War and Spider-Man, you know?
Right.
I wish it were better. And I you can tell that a lot of care and love went into it, but man, there is just nothing like there to it. Like, it has some of the worst enemy AI I've ever come across. I mean, like, there's all these similar to Far Cry where, you know, you kind of go to camps and try to take them down. And like the people are just dumb. Like, you can just sit in, you know, waist high grass, throw a rock and then just stab everyone repeatedly. Like, yeah. There is just nothing to it. And I was hoping that there would be like this kind of fun interaction between like the human enemies and then the zombie enemies. And they almost don't intersect at all, you know? So the way, you know, Far Cry would have, you know, you could be like approaching a camp and all of a sudden you unleash a bear or like a cougar or something insane, right, and it just wreaks havoc. Days Gone just doesn't have any of that. I feel like there's very little kind of sandbox dynamic moments that happen. And oh my gosh, I went through a story quest today where I literally drove from one place to another and then talked to someone and then drove back and talked and then drove and talked. And it was like, congratulations, you completed that mission. Press X. I think it's a pretty big disappointment.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. I bounced off of it pretty quick, but it's amazing the level of technology that constitutes a disappointment these days, you know, because it is impressive on a technical level. And it is,
for
as
sure.
you said, gorgeous and expansive and the world seems well thought out. For me, I didn't even get as far as you're talking about, even close to that, but the sort of tenor of the world is just sort of bland. You know, it's just the main character is kind of bland. I talk about having a little bit of post-apocalyptic fatigue, you know,
sure.
and zombie fatigue. It's just like, there's gotta be some hook to make me want to be in this place and hang out with these people. And that fundamentally I didn't get in the first, you know.
And you won't get it. I mean, there's not a likable character among them. I mean, I don't think Deacon is very likable at all. I don't find him even remotely interesting. Like, his motivations are very simplistic and black and white. And, you know, like, his ethics code is just really like eye rolly. And it's just, I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to finish it because I'm at the point where I'm skipping cutscenes because I just don't care, you know?
Well, Christian, you're kind of skipping cutscenes on it too, right?
I mean, that's, yeah, I think the review I can give of Days Gone is that I've had it for a week and haven't played it. and I think maybe it's just you, it's your fault, Jeff. No, it's like, you know, listening to last week's show and kind of hearing things, it's, there are so many games to play, and I still am having fun with Mortal Kombat 11, and I'm streaming retro games on my analog for St. Jude stuff that, like,
yeah, dude, you're not just competing with all the games that are coming out. You're competing with the games that came out 30 years ago.
Well, that's everybody. I mean, yes, I get your joke, and it's funny and true. But also, like, to Aaron's point about Game Pass and Mortal Kombat 11 and Mortal Kombat 10 being on Game Pass. I mean, we all are. And I think the same thing is true of TV or movies, where it's, this new TV show's out. Okay, great. But I heard The Wire was good.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, The Wire's still there. And it's like, there's a new game out. Okay, well, Sea of Thieves just updated quests. So buy every, you know, like.
You're not wrong, man.
It takes a lot to pull me in. So I have it. I need to play it. But I just haven't found that time to sit down and be like, let me play this game that everybody says is fine.
Yeah.
But
and it's also, it's not just like a game you can sit down and play. It's, I'm going to invest 40 hours like Aaron's talking about and not be done and be in this big old world and doing all these quests that you have to get done.
And I know my 4-year-old wants to watch me play it, so I got to wait.
Yeah. you can't screw her out of that experience.
No, she's dying to know the plot, and
she wants to find out what happened to Deacon's wife.
It also has some of the most hilariously, like, I feel like audio clips play at the wrong time sometimes.
Yeah,
and
I noticed, like, that too.
You know? And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
We're not even doing that.
Yeah. Like you said, I like Bend. I like the studio. I like a lot of their handheld work. And I was, you know, I think we were both pretty high on this game after, was it last E3? I don't remember when
it was. Two E3s ago, but yeah.
But yeah, I'll have thoughts next week, and hopefully if they're similar to yours and Aaron's the past 2 weeks, we can keep it brief. But I vow to play it.
But you have been playing a bunch of retro games. You want to talk about that anymore?
I want to say that the Saturdays this month, except for, as I open up my calendar, because there's one that I can't do it. The 18th is the one I won't. But the 11th and 25th, I'll be streaming in support of St. Jude, raising money for them on my Twitch, twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And because I'm raising money for kids and curing childhood cancer, I'm playing kid-friendly games, and I'm playing on my analog Mega SG, my Genesis, playing old Genesis games. And so I was recording this on Sunday, last Saturday, starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, I played Sonic 3. Love Sonic 3, so awesome. Turtles Hyperstone Heist, which, consider that the Turtles in Time for the Genesis. If I'm being honest, not as good as Turtles in Time, but it's the one I grew up with, so it's better. And then I played Aladdin on Genesis, which is still beautiful. And I don't think I ever beat it as a kid, because I got to a level that I had no recollection of last night, which was fun. Be like, oh yeah, I remember this. And then being like, I guess I always just rented this game from Blockbuster, because I have no clue what to do on this level. But yeah, so just Genesis, old Genesis games. Of the three, I think Sonic 3 is one revisiting if you haven't played it. And if you like Sonic, it has a score uncredited but made by Michael Jackson in parts, which is interesting. I think the music's pretty cool, and they did interesting things with, like, the power-up bubbles and stuff like that you can get a fire one, a bubble one for underwater, invincibility. It's a really well-made game. So, but that's all. We don't need to spend a lot of time on them.
Yeah, Christian, I just want to say that the Aladdin, Mortal Kombat, and Turtles are all better on Super Nintendo, so, you know.
Boom, console wars.
Wait, why did you say that, Jeff? Why did you say boom, console wars? I heard a bunch of silence, and then you said boom, console wars. So I don't know.
Yeah, you can put your head in the sand all you want, man. But Nintendo's got power. I don't know. I'm trying to stir the pot.
Yeah, no. I mean, Aaron, you're probably not wrong about Turtles. Sonic doesn't exist on the Nintendo, and you are wrong about Aladdin. You are objectively wrong about Aladdin.
I mean,
Aladdin.
No.
But that's okay.
Genesis Aladdin has better animation, but worse gameplay. That's all there is to it, you know?
Okay, and Aaron has a nice voice and worse opinions. Like, what are we doing here?
All right. Well, on my playlist, I have started playing a game that I blind bought because I was sure I was going to love it. And guess what? I was right. SteamWorld Quest Hand of Gilgamesh. Just blind bought that baby. I knew so Image and Form is a developer that has been making these SteamWorld games. And I love this. I love this concept because they created this thing, the SteamWorld setting, which is like where a bunch of sort of steampunky robots are the main characters. And then they've made a bunch of games that are in wildly different genres, but all set in the same pseudo world. But none of them even have the same main characters. It's just like, it's just thematically the same kind of, but wildly different genres, wildly different stories, wildly different characters. It's just a cool concept, in my opinion. Like they're carving out this little world and populating it with new characters and just different kinds of games. So they made SteamWorld Dig, which I didn't play, but I loved SteamWorld Dig 2. And they played SteamWorld Heist, and they made SteamWorld Heist, which is also a game that I didn't play, but now I want to really badly. Because I like SteamWorld Dig 2 so much that I'm like, I'm going to try out this SteamWorld Quest. It sounds like a game I would love. It sounds like Battle Chasers Night War or, you know, old turn-based role-playing games of my youth that I enjoy. I love turn-based. I love card games, as you know. So that's what this game is. It is, you know, SteamWorld Dig was basically a platformer sort of mashup with Dig Dug thing. SteamWorld Heist, I guess, is a strategy game. And SteamWorld Quest is a full-on role-playing game done in this gorgeous art style, beautiful painterly art style, 2D sort of side-scrolling, almost looks like Golden Axe or something like that, but way more beautiful. And you have turn-based combat that is handled through decks of cards. So all of your skills are done through decks of cards, just like... Oh, God, my brain's not working. The game that I love that I said it could be my game of the year this year because it finally came out. Christian, help me. The game, the card game that was on Steam in early access for 2 years and I put it on my list. Oh, what's it called?
I thought you were going to talk about that game that's like a card game, but then you do Arkham Combat, but that's not the game you're talking about.
No. That's Hand of Fate.
Slay the Spire.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Jakes.
Sorry. Why am
you
I
know so... your game of the year.
Yes. Well, it doesn't mean I can remember the title. Slay the Spire. It's just like Slay the Spire, which is, you know, uses cards as the attacks in turn-based combat. So in SteamWorld Quest, you have a number of little characters in your party, and each of them has their own deck, sort of like if you're playing Hearthstone or something and you have different classes, and you build a deck for each of the classes, but each of the characters, at least as far as I am, maybe it expands as you get deeper into the game, but at this point right now, each of the characters can have 8 cards in their deck, and you build a deck out of cards that you will loot or buy or acquire in some way in the game, and those are your attacks. They'll be, you know, magical attacks, or they'll be straight you know, physical attacks, or they'll be buffs or debuffs, or, you know, whatever actions that you can do are on these cards, and you'll have a hand that you'll draw each round of a certain number of cards, and those will be composed of the cards from the decks of all of your characters. So you may get, you know, 3 or 4 cards from one character, a couple of cards from another, 3 or 4 cards from a third. So you have this hand with a variety of cards from a variety of your characters, and then you play 3 of them on your turn. And just straight physical attack cards or straight sort of basic action cards generate steam power that is a cumulative resource for all of your characters. So you can have one character's card build up some steam power and have another character's card use that steam power to fuel a more powerful magical attack. But the really clever part comes in where basically in most of these kinds of games, you'll choose one action for each character, right? You'll choose what, you know, like an old Final Fantasy or any of those Japanese style role-playing games where you have turn-based combat, you would select an action for each of your characters to do. One character's going to heal the party. One character's going to do a punch. One character's going to do a magic fireball, whatever it is. This game does not work like that. You get to pick any three cards from your deck, and you can pick multiple actions for one character. In fact, and this is the most interesting part, if you select three cards of the same character, you get a bonus special action that happens that's specific to that character that is determined by what weapon they have. So you can buy a new weapon, and that gives you this new cool bonus action. And so you're incentivized and rewarded if you happen to draw enough cards in your hand that you can do three of the same characters' cards. So it's this really cool layer of strategy of like, well, maybe the best move is to use cards from different characters, but if I do all three cards from the same character, I get this cool extra thing that I get to do that just happens automatically. So maybe I'll do that instead. It's so cool and so different, and it's such a cool way of thinking about it, and the cards themselves are really cool, and the art is fantastic. I love the fights in this game. The fights are challenging. I have died a couple of times in fights, but always felt like it was super fair, and if I just played it a little more smartly, I would have won, and I actually did the next time I tried it. It's great. The combat system is excellent.
What are you playing on?
It's on Switch.
Is it exclusive, or is that that's just what
you don't think it's exclusive, but it might be. I don't even know what I can Google it. I'm sure.
Is it touchscreen? Because I thought it was on Switch, but it seems like maybe you could use touchscreen stuff. But I'm curious how it.
I haven't even tried. It may support it. I don't even know. I haven't touched the screen while playing it. So
Chat
I
just says it's a timed Switch exclusive. Because I feel like stuff like that would fit so well on the Switch. It seems very pick up and playable. And like deck management and kind of getting in, sounds like
yeah. I mean, really I get cool. It would totally work as a touchscreen game, and it may very well support it. I just have been using the buttons and the sticks. You move your character around on the screen. It's got like it's sort of like Metroid style, where each screen is connected around the map, and you go to the edge of that screen, and then it loads the new screen in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So.
Do I know what you mean? We're talking about retro games. Yeah, I got you.
So it's like that. Where, and the map is like an interconnected flow chart of screens, you know? So it's got that cool aesthetic to it. And you're moving your character around like Golden Axe style or Turtles in Time style on that screen. And you walk up behind characters and you can smack them and initiate a surprise round against them if they don't see you beforehand. It's cool. The story, I may not be far enough to have it really get its hooks into me. It's kind of written with a fun, irreverent style that's typical of the SteamWorld games, where there's a little comedy, it's a little goofy, it's fun characters, these robots that are kind of silly. It's not particularly interesting, but I'm not really playing it for that, right? Maybe it'll get more compelling as I go. I am reading all the text as it goes, but I'm not really paying super attention to it. Just the fights are so fun. They are really compelling. And I dig these kinds of games. And this is an excellent, excellent version of them that I could heartily recommend.
How long do you think it is? I feel like sometimes these games could be very short, or sometimes you're like, oh, this is great. It's 80 hours long. Like, what happened? Do you have a sense of the scope yet?
Battle Chasers Night War was like that, where it was like, man, I'm really digging this game. It's still going. I'm like, how many hours is this long? The other thing that I don't have a sense of yet, and I haven't really read any reviews of it, so I've only had my experience, but every time you save the game, like you find a statue and it lets you save the game, and it says, when you save the game, you can replenish all the health of your party, but if you do, we're going to respawn all the enemies, which makes me go, oh, is this game going to get grindy at a certain point where I'm going to have to respawn all the enemies and go grind them and level up in order to be? I haven't had that happen yet, but I can certainly see that being a potential issue in the future. I don't know if the game actually does that. And I don't have a sense of how long it is. I think I'm in like chapter 4 right now. So I haven't been playing it very long at all. I just started playing it. But I'm digging it. I really, really like it. And I think people will, if they have similar sensibilities to mine. So it's called SteamWorld Quest Hand of Gilgamesh. All right. We do have a listener who wrote in a review of a game. I always welcome that. we only have so many hours in our lives and so many games we can play. So if there's something you'd like us to talk about or something you'd like us to talk about more or differently, you're welcome to send in your own reviews, and you can send them to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This one comes from Dane Fisher from ClickSticks Gaming. Dame says, first off, I want to thank you all for helping me through my gym sessions each and every week. Hashtag geeks in sneaks. Nice. Geeks in sneaks. He said, I wanted to discuss a PC exclusive game I had an opportunity to put a little time into. Mordhau? I think that's pronounced Mordhau. Mordhau is a medieval multiplayer slasher fest of epic proportions. There are three game types, Horde, Battle Royale, and Frontline. I put most of my time over the past 2 days into Frontline. This game type is a constant tug of war between two 32-player teams attempting to capture choke points to score points. The game is presented primarily in first person, though there is a third person perspective players can access. The game utilizes skill-based mouse combat. Allow me to elaborate. As in any medieval game, you wield an assortment of melee weapons or a bow. When using a melee class, you must flick your mouse in different directions while attacking to determine which way your weapon will slash. You also have opportunities to parry, block, chamber, or stab opponents. It's a constant rock, paper, scissors battle against players until you win the duel, become swarmed, overpowered, or exhaust your stamina. The graphics are stunning, and it offers a variety of maps right off the bat. There are multiple classes to choose from. If melee combat is not your thing, you can choose a ranged class to hang back and pick off opponents as they close in. But be careful, team damage does occur, so don't go blindly raining arrows on dense areas or you will lose points for hitting teammates. In addition, there are engineering classes to help fortify and catapults players can use to rain fire. The game is best defined as a chaotic pit of blood and filth, and I simply cannot get enough of it. Unfortunately, the launch has been a bit marred by server issues and purposeful team killing without an option to boot players. That being said, I can't recommend Mordhau enough if you are into massive medieval battles with a skill-based system. Very different sounding to me. Very cool. Again, that's a PC-exclusive game. Mordhau, sent in by Dane Fisher. Thanks, Dane. Appreciate it. If you want to have your review on the show, send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's do a little quick questions. Quick questions are where we answer your questions that you send in to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by posting them on the sticky thread in our subreddit over at 5by5dlc.reddit.com. Haven't done this in a while, so some of the questions have been backing up for a while. We'd love you to keep sending those. Send more. We will do them more frequently as time permits. But this first one comes from Michael M., who says, what is your favorite game you would love to see get the next-gen remake treatment like Resident Evil 2 got? Aaron, do you have a pick of a game that you'd love to see get remade, like the full-on remake treatment, not just a remaster or up-resed, but remade like Resident Evil 2?
Oh, yeah. I love this question because instantly it came to mind is Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver.
Oh, that's a great pick. Yeah.
Which introduced me to Amy Hennig, who then went on to direct and write Uncharted 1-3 and, on the canceled Star Wars game. I think she is just one of the most visionary people in the industry. And that game was incredible. I think it came out in 99 or 2000. It was on PS1 and Dreamcast. And the PS1 one was hot garbage, but the Dreamcast one, like just having that added, horsepower was really incredible. It was almost kind of like a Metroid-y game where you would, hunt down your vampire brethren and, suck up their powers. And it was just an incredible, narrative focused game kind of back, when they weren't that common. And I would just love to see that given that kind of RE2 style treatment, whole new engine and, improved combat and all that stuff. Cause the core is just super strong.
Yeah, man. I wonder what the rights issues are with that. I feel like that's an IP that we would have seen.
It's Square Enix, I believe, because it was Crystal Dynamics who developed it. And, you know, they tried to kind of resurrect it a couple of years ago. I don't know, probably like 7 years ago now. I'm old. but they canceled that game. But yeah, that's always been my dream to see like Crystal D, because I love what Crystal Dynamics does with the Tomb Raider. I would just love to see them take another stab at Soul Reaver.
That's a great answer. Christian, you have one?
I have two. I know we're recording this on the 5th, so it's a day late, but in terms of the 4th, I would love X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
I thought you were going to say KOTOR.
And that's the next one. It's KOTOR. Yeah. Those are the two. Nice. So preaching to the choir on both accounts, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. I haven't played it in forever, but I believe the mechanics of that game are flawless, and I hope I'm right. and that game in, you know, if you're going full on, give it to me in VR. Please.
Yeah,
and
baby.
Thank you. Because what the Battlefront demo did, you know, whatever it was 3 years ago, I want that. And then KOTOR, that story is so cool. I love that period of Star Wars, you know, the forever ago in Star Wars lore. And, you know, that's BioWare to me. You know, that was BioWare firing at all cylinders. I would take Jade Empire too while we're talking.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick two, it'd be X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and KOTOR. Imagine.
Nobody talks about Jade Empire, you know? You don't hear anybody talk about that game. Yeah.
It's a great game. But imagine KOTOR looking like Resident Evil 2.
Or
like that,
like
the quality of the visuals of that. Yeah, or Battlefront.
Oh
holy
gosh.
Crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Those would be mine.
I would buy that. I'll help fund that somehow. Yeah. Those are good. You know, I feel like I'm going to be the least interesting one here, because I'm going with the first thing that popped into my head. And I kind of feel like, because it's the Resident Evil 2 example, and Shadow of the Colossus is an example of these games that got the real, you know, full on redo treatment, that it lends itself to games that are narrative based. And I think that's the spirit of the question, but I gotta be honest. The first thing that popped into my head that I really want is SSX Tricky.
Yeah.
I want somebody to just put that on a awesome engine and just do it to the nines. I want that game. That game was so much fun, and I want it to just be visually spectacular. Maybe you could make a new SSX. That would be fine too, but just redo Tricky and do it with a better engine. I want that. That would be amazing.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I loved all those EA big games.
Yeah.
NBA Street, FIFA Street, I thought was a lot of fun. Tricky was great.
Dude, there was a wakeboarding game that I put so many hours into. And it was crazy. You would like be pulled behind a boat like you do for wakeboarding. And you would do all these crazy tricks. And they had levels where you're like, inside a flooded, like in Venice or something, where it's flooded inside a city, and you could jump off the sides of buildings and stuff. It was so rad. Probably if I played it now, I'd be like, this is terrible. But I played that game so much. I don't even remember what it was called. I think it was like Wakeboarding Unleashed. Yeah. I think it's called Wakeboarding Unleashed. Anyway. All right. This second quick question comes from Jordan Aslett, who says, what one game do you love that didn't get a lot of attention and you wish more people knew about it? Aaron, do you have a game you wish more people knew about?
Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver. No,
that's pretty good.
I mean, it's a really great game. And there was actually three of them too. So like, there's a lot to discover. And you know, it's been absent so long. So if anyone's missed those, I think they're worth replaying. I think the second one is the worst one by far. It was kind of like a sophomore slump. But the third one actually had like a really cool combat system. And so, yeah, like that Legacy of Kain series is like, it's super solid. And I'm sure like a lot of it doesn't hold up. But I think that the third one is called Legacy of Kain Defiance. I think that probably holds up fairly well. And I feel like that was like an original Xbox title that you could play on 360 backwards compatible. So just go back a generation and dig out your 360.
Love it. Christian, do you have a game you wish people knew more about?
This is hard. This is the type of question that tomorrow I'd be like, I meant to say,
yeah, totally.
You know, like you always get this wrong. So I'll take the cheap answer and just say the Dreamcast.
That is cheap. That is a
I
terrible
love the
answer. I wish more people knew about the Dreamcast.
Where you can play Legacy of Pain and Soul Reaver.
Totally.
Yes. Yes. And this one, people, I think that people knew about the game, and you and I have talked about being fans of it, and I don't know why it didn't hit harder than it did, but I think Infamous Second Son, it was a PS4 launch game.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer.
And it's, I think it's incredible.
It's so good.
I think it still looks pretty. I played it, I don't know, probably 3 months ago now, 4 months ago. Yeah, play that game. I'm sure it has to be cheap.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And I'm excited for Ghost of Tsushima, but man, I would love another Infamous game. those are great superhero games. They're superhero games that aren't, you know, a superhero you've ever heard of. It's really cool. Yeah. For mine, my go-to on this question has always been Hob, but I feel like I made a big deal about Hob when it got released just a couple of weeks ago on Switch.
So, you're kind of a Hob snob.
I am a bit of a Hob snob. I'm Hob snobbing with the big wigs. And so maybe I'll say the game that has already been mentioned in this episode once, and that is Hand of Fate. Hand of Fate's real good. It's real fun. It's clever. You know, I don't think it gets the recognition it deserves. It's a really clever, fun, smart. I mean, clever and smart are synonyms, so you get it. But it's really a cool mashup of styles, cool cards, storytelling inside cards, randomized storytelling. Does so many novel things, and it does them all pretty well. I mean, the combat is like Batman action combat, and that could be a little better. I think maybe that might be the only thing holding it back, is that it doesn't sing quite as well as an Arkham game or as a Spider-Man, you know, on PlayStation 4 does. If the combat was just a little bit, you know, if they had like just a bigger budget for that, maybe it would have really taken off and been a big hit. But it's good enough that it makes the game really fun. And the other side of it, which is these, you know, you're sitting down with a tarot card reader type person, and they're leading you through this adventure that is randomized because it's cards that come out of a deck. That is done so well. So more people should play Hand of Fate and Hand of Fate 2. Both are excellent. All right, next one. This one comes from Sir Bubblesworth. Sir Bubblesworth says, film adaptations of video games are a touchy subject. We talked about one prominently in this episode with Sonic. For most gamers, because of the numbers of notable failures and disappointments we've gotten. But I'm interested to know what films Jeff Christian and guest would like to have adapted into video games. Sure, sci-fi properties like Star Trek and even The Matrix are easy targets and, in fact, have gotten their own video game treatments. But the advent of walking simulators, I myself would love to play something like Richard Linklater's Before series, where you're just in the heart of a couple of or head of a couple of characters getting to know one another and sharing life stories. Interesting. So I think the spirit of this question is, what video game adaptation from a movie would you like that maybe doesn't immediately present itself because it's a big action movie? So Aaron, do you have anything like that you think would make an interesting video game, but maybe isn't obvious as a video game property?
Harold and Maude. No, I'm kidding. I just wanted an Avengers game. Like, can we please get like our Crystal Dynamics Avengers game? Like, I know that's the obvious thing, but like, it's been so long, and like, we've had 10 years of Marvel movies and we still don't have a freaking Avengers game.
Yeah, we literally had the End Game and no game. There's no game.
I'm so excited by Endgame. I just want to like smash things, you know?
Yeah. Well, hopefully this is the E3 where they'll unveil it, because they have the big Square Enix.
I mean, yeah, they have to. They have to. Like, what else do they have?
They don't have anything else that we know about. Yeah. So hopefully it's this year. But yes, Bravo. I will play that.
So either Avengers or Harold and Maude. Either one, you know.
All right. Avengers, Harold and Maude crossover game, which I'd be into.
Amazing. By Telltale.
Christian, you have a clever answer for this?
I mean it sincerely. So I think people, I needed to say that, because if I just said it, people would be like, you're joking. I think there's an incredible like dating sim, like Dream Daddy or something, or maybe it's even Persona-esque, set in the Twilight universe. I think
Twilight. Interesting.
Thinking of like the Pacific Northwest and Days Gone, I do like that part of the country. It's moody. It's atmospheric. It's part of why I think Twilight was such a hit, because it's like rainy and pouty. And these attractive kids are walking around not kissing when you want them just to kiss. It's got vampires, werewolves, like the all of those things. I think are very sexy and interesting.
Is Twilight still a thing? It feels like a thing 10 years ago. Is it still a thing?
I mean, it's still a thing, but is it as in the zeitgeist the way it was? No, of course not. But I think it'd make a very interesting. I'd like to see it. I don't want the action game where you're running around defeating, you know, hordes of whatevers. I want the relationship, the dating sim, the, you know, maybe even Catherine-esque, like something interesting with these characters. I think Persona would be the treatment I'd want to take for it, kind of exploring those worlds and playing up the camp and the you know, the dating sim aspect of it. I think could be really fun.
Interesting. I'm not there with you on that, but okay, fair enough. Mine is one of my favorite movies of the last 10 years for sure, and I think it would be a really compelling, cool video game. And maybe along the lines of kind of what you're talking about with like relationship-y, but with a layer of digital mystery. And that is Her. Hmm. The movie starring Joaquin Phoenix where he literally falls in love with a digital assistant. And I think it could be a really interesting thing of playing a game where you're sort of interacting with a fake digital assistant that, you know, you – all of the game is basically the AI of her and how you interact with her and what becomes of that. And you go about your life, but she helps you and develops and evolves. I think that'd be a really cool, interesting thing. And I would play that. What was that game that I played a while back? That was that wacky dating sim thing that like folded in on itself and became weird. What the heck was that called? That like Japanese schoolgirl thing that like became it.
Oh, right. I remember you talking about it, but I can't remember the name.
What was the thing called? Anyway, somebody in the chat will know. But kind of like that, I think it could be crazy.
Well, Frank and Thumbs had you in the chat. Doki Doki.
Yes, Doki Doki. Thank you, Frank and Thumbs. Doki Doki Literature Club is the full name of it. All right. Last one. This one from Aaron Suarez. He says, quick question. What is the greater evil? Unskippable cutscenes or health items not returning to your inventory when you die? Aaron?
Unskippable cutscenes should be illegal. It's criminal. Yeah.
I think both of these are terrible. I think the only thing worse than unskippable cutscenes is unpausable cutscenes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And cutscenes where if you try to pause, you skip. That mm-hmm. drives me insane. Mm-hmm. When I just want to pause. I push start and it goes, oh, you wanted to skip this? And we didn't give you a, are you sure you want to skip this? Oh, I hate that so much. But I also hate items not returning to my inventory when I die. So that I think that's the thing where, you know, you're in a big prolonged cuts fight, the boss, and you use all your health potions and you still lose. And then it goes, do you want to continue? And you go, yeah. And you continue and you have spent all those health potions. You're like, well, now I'm definitely not going to beat this. If I couldn't beat it with the health potions, now I have no chance. So both of those are bad. Christian?
To your point about like the continuance being gone, like that's not continuing. If my consumables are gone, the boss's health needs to be where it was also.
It's like, yeah.
It's like, do you want to try again in a worse state than where you were the first time in which you failed? It's like, no. Like, why would you think I'd be able to complete it? This? Remember last time when you were better equipped and still couldn't do it?
Yeah.
You're going to be worse off now. Good luck. To me, it's what you said. Unskippable cutscenes, and then that perfect trifecta of horror of not being able to pause, but skipping, but not telling you. Like, give me a little prompt. Like, if I push start, it's be like, skip? Like, you know, yeah. Don't let me accidentally skip it.
Right. Yeah, but also, you have to let me pause it. If I'm in a cutscene that lasts 5 minutes and I can't pause it, that is the worst thing ever, because invariably my wife will need something or my kids will need something or the phone will ring or somebody will come to the door and I'm like, I am in a position I can't, it's untenable. There's no way out of this.
And checkpoint me after a cutscene. Oh, yeah. Like that's another part. It's like you die to the boss. Oh man, I died. Try again. Sure. 5 minutes later, like, come on. I don't need to see it again.
Yeah. One good thing I can say about Days Gone is it does all of those things actually quite well.
All right, there you go. Bye, Days Gone.
And skip the cutscenes.
All right. That was quick questions. Thank you so much for sending those in. Again, we need more of them. So you can send them to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or post them in our subreddit, 5x5dlc.reddit.com. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have our parting gift coming up, so stick around for that. But Aaron Morales, thank you so much for being here, sir. It's always a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much. Always a delight. I super am happy to be here every time.
Well, it is amazing that you quit your job just so you can make that. Thank you. Tell people where they can keep up with you and the things you do online.
I'm on Twitter at AirlineM and Instagram at the same if you want to see pictures of my cats or all the vinyl records I buy every single day. So
nice. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Well, you might not know, but I'm raising money for St. Jude.
Nice.
You can find the link at christianspicer.com. They do incredible work. They share their research freely around the world to help cure and eradicate childhood cancer. Patients that go there in the U.S., or you know, they go to there, don't cover any travel. There's people internationally, too, when they come. They'll cover all the costs of travel, medication, treatment, food. It's truly incredible. I'll be streaming all month to support them further on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And you can find the donation link again at christianspicer.com. All of it goes to St. Jude. It's tax deductible. You can check with your CPA, blah, blah, blah. But it's wonderful, and I'm so happy to be supporting them. And then if you're listening to this Monday and happy to be in San Diego on Tuesday, I'll be headlining Lestat's Comedy Night in San Diego. I think it's 3343 Adams Avenue. I'll be going down with Luke Schwartz and Bruce Gray, headlining that show. And that's the venue where I recorded both of my albums. It's a wonderful, awesome little theater down in San Diego, a little black box. It's just intimate and cool. And I love going down there and performing on that stage where so many wonderful comedians have performed before. So that is Tuesday in San Diego at 9 p.m. It's all ages, but the content I'm sure will include cursing and the like. And I believe it is free to get into. So check it out.
Very cool. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And as I mentioned at the top, I'm Dungeon Master in a brand new live play D&D show called The Dungeon Run. And I'm really proud of it. I have put so much work into this, and I invented an entire world. We have some amazing players, some amazing characters they've brought in. People are already falling in love with them. I have never seen more positive YouTube comments, which is like so weird. You know, they say don't read the comments, but I did, and they're almost overwhelmingly positive. It's great. People love the show, and I just want more people to watch it. So you can watch it live on Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun, or you can watch it on YouTube. It is on the Caffeine YouTube channel. I put a link on my website, jeffcanada.com. So just go to jeffcanada.com. You can find it there, or you can listen to it as an audio podcast, which is a fun way to consume these things because they're real long. And it does sound like almost like an audiobook because it's a spoken story that we're improvising as we go. You don't have to know anything about Dungeons & Dragons to understand it. It's a lot of fun, and you can find that podcast version anywhere you get podcasts. So I hope you check it out. I'm really, really proud of it. Also, I do the Slash Filmcast when we talk about movies and TV shows. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. All right. Oh, and you can also always email us here. We love getting your feedback at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up with our parting gifts. Give us a suggestion. Aaron Morales, what do you have something to help people get through their week?
Yeah, my favorite singer in the whole world is this French Dutch Israeli singer-songwriter named Karen Ann, and she just released her 8th studio album. It's in French for the first time in like 5 or 7 years. I discovered her when I was studying abroad in like 2000 in France, and I have been obsessed with her ever since. And I've probably seen her like a dozen times. I just got to see her live at City Winery here in New York City, and she played with a string quartet, and it was just like a magical night of sitting there drinking wine and listening to like the most beautiful music you've ever heard. So I would highly recommend her new album. It's called Bleu. And her name is Karen Ann, K-E-R-E-N-A-N-N.
Yeah, K-E-R-E-N.
Yeah.
Very cool. I just clicked on this. Can't wait to listen to it. Very, very cool.
Yeah, just like said, just it's heartbreaking and gorgeous, just like beautiful stuff. Yeah.
It's called Bleh. awesome. Karen Ann. Christian, do you have a parting gift for the folks?
I do, and it sticks with this theme. You and I were fortunate enough recently to go see The Midnight Live.
Night before last.
The night before last is when we were recording this, and had some, you know, important person treatment there, which was thank you to them and The Midnight and everyone.
It was incredible. It was incredible.
They have a new single out called America Online that came out earlier this month, the beginning of this month, that I think is phenomenal. And having seen them, being fortunate to see them live a couple of times now, this is going to sound like I'm exaggerating, but I truly mean it. I think seeing The Midnight play live with a group of friends is what life is all about. Like it's an incredible experience. They're so amazing live.
Yeah.
And I love the message and the feeling behind their music, and seeing that in a room of people. It's beautiful. I think going to concerts in general is amazing because of that connection in the room. But having seen The Midnight now a couple of times live, it's truly incredible, and they put on a great show. So if you can find them, I know they're kind of wrapping up their U.S. tour, if not already wrapped. Sorry, this is late, but go see them live. They're absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and we've talked about The Midnight a bunch of times on this show, but if you haven't yet just checked out their music, my goodness, what are you waiting for? Their latest album, Kids, is not only one of my favorite albums ever. It's my son's favorite album. He's 2.5 and his favorite song is Lost Boy. And he always requests it in the car, Dad Lost Boy, Daddy Lost Boy. And so, you know, it has a 2-year-old's seal of approval. But also all of their music is incredible. And yes, it was what an experience seeing them live. My goodness. So fun. So fun. So I'll second all of that. We also have a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Matthew McFerrin. Matthew says, I've dropped a small donation to your St. Jude's appeal. I hope you get above and beyond the $6,000 target. And I've been in touch previously, but wanted to reiterate that our daughter actually had treatment from one of St. Jude's leukemia protocols. And the fact that they send their research far and wide for all to use is amazing in today's age of get what you can and screw the other guys. We're in the UK, and to know that the best and most current research is being sent to where it is needed most is so very encouraging and helps give hope where there is so little. I can't recommend your fundraising enough and would urge everyone to donate, if not to your campaign, then to something or anything at all related to childhood cancer. Cancer is something that deserves no place in our lives, let alone in that of a child. Anything to help combat this is surely worth a dollar at the very least. Perhaps as a parting gift, you could ask your listeners, followers, etc., to maybe skip that morning coffee shop visit and PayPal that charity they hope they never have to depend on. Whoa, that's powerful. thanks to both your pursuits and to help people through their day, fundraising or podcasting, every little bit helps. Thank you, Matthew. Powerful. And thank you, Christian, for, you know, making this part of our message on the show. I really appreciate it. And it bears repeating here in the parting gifts. All right. My parting gift is a new show on Netflix that I'm enjoying. My wife and I watched the first 2 episodes last night. Brand new show starring Christina Applegate, of all people, called Dead to Me. Really interesting show. Really, really interesting. It's kind of an hour-long drama in the style of, you know, the Breaking Bads of the world. But it's a half hour. Not really something you see very often. It's that tone, that style, but half-hour episodes. Usually if it's a half hour, especially in this modern age, it is a comedy. This not a comedy. This is a drama with really kind of creepy undertones. Very good. Very good performances. Really interesting. It's about a woman who's dealing with the death of her husband in a car accident and meets this mysterious stranger at a support group. And then things get weirder from there. I'm digging it. I recommend it. It's called Dead to Me. It's on Netflix. All right. that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Aaron Morales and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room for hanging out with all of us live as it happens. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those bumpers. And thank you to each of you who download the show and listen. We appreciate you. We're grateful. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.